Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. Job losses go down again. Can consumer spending and a good economy be far behind? Well, yes, actually. The Social Security Administration announces seniors will get no COLA in the new year. Gee, guys, not even diet? A falcon wasn't in the balloon. How about the attic? A story out of our country's past. When a judge denied a marriage license to an interracial couple in Louisiana. What's that? It was this afternoon? The Bank of America's, before we talk about the Bank of America, we'll talk at a later point about capital punishment. It turns out that a talk show host has obtained a pardon for his great uncles who were wrongly executed around the time of the Civil War. Additionally, as I was about to say before I interrupted myself, the Bank of America's chief, the CEO, Ken Lewis, agreed to do a good job this year for $1.5 million. Now he's agreed to be good for nothing. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That's me. That last item was actually a theft from Soupy Sales for the two people in our audience who will remember Soupy Sales. We're going to discuss all those things and more, and we have a guest this evening coming up in about 25 minutes. Rob Trigg is a radio personality here in Arizona and is also the owner of a company that does commercial voice productions, and we're going to talk about radio and commercials and advertising and all things like that. If you wish to join us either then or before, or you'd like to discuss your opinion of capital punishment, which we may touch upon, the number to reach us at is 347-994-3796. When you call that number, the system will put you on hold until it's time to bring you on the air, until that opportunity arises. And then you'll be on with us. And again, that's 347-994-3796. Before we go any further, I should point out that we are brought to you by... we're brought to you by Blog Wizardry, which is a company that I own and operate. What we do at Blog Wizardry is write blogs for companies that have websites but don't already blog themselves. The benefit to you is that in addition to getting more business directly, you will get more links out on the web, which will result in your position being higher when someone does a relevant search on any one of the well-known search engines, including but not limited to Google. So if you think you might be interested in finding out more about that, you can go to jeffonblogging, all one word, .blogspot.com. Thank you for listening to that rather obvious commercial message. Let's go into a little detail about some of the stories we've touched upon in the opening. The job losses have gone down, and people are talking about the employment picture going in the right direction, which is certainly true. Part of that is undoubtedly the stimulus that Congress passed and the president signed. The money is getting into the economy, and therefore more people are buying things, and as a result, more people are being hired. But when people believe that this is a sign that the economy is improving, that's not quite true. As we've discussed on this program before, and as you've undoubtedly heard elsewhere, unemployment or employment is a lagging indicator, meaning it only improves substantially after the rest of the economy improves, the GDP goes up, and so on and so forth. The gross domestic product, the GDP, has still not increased, and until it does and is sustainably increased, there will not be a long-term improvement in the employment picture in the country. The GDP is the total production in dollar terms of all the goods and services that the country has, and much of that is driven by consumers, but not all of it. And one of the reasons that the stimulus has a benefit with regard to the economy is that with all the money in the economy, once it's all in, you create more demand. People have more money. They want to buy more things. That is essentially why it stimulates the economy. So the unemployment picture, yes, appears like it's getting better, but it's not really better yet. And you can expect some reports over the next 6 to 9 months, which will demonstrate that unemployment will be rising in certain months. But generally, the trend is certainly an improvement, and it will continue going that way, but there will be some bumps and stops along that way. The Social Security Administration did announce that there will be no COLA this year for seniors who receive Social Security. COLA is an acronym for Cost of Living Adjustment. And the reason for no cost of living adjustment this year is that the cost of living didn't go up. According to the statistics, the cost of living this year was flat. Normally, because of inflationary pressures, the amount it costs to buy products and services increases, and therefore Social Security gives more money to those folks who are receiving benefits from Social Security to keep them even, more or less. Outside the issue of whether, in fact, it only does that or actually pays them more than is necessary to keep up with the cost of living, is another argument for another day. But the fact is, there, because of what the economy has done over the last year, they will give no COLA this year, and they were predicting that it seems probable there will be none next year. A lot of seniors tend to depend on those increases, not because they've already spent the money as such, but they have come to expect the increases, so they always assume that the Social Security income will increase. Well, this year it won't. As a result of that, the president and some members of Congress have discussed the possibility of throwing some money at Social Security recipients. They've talked about a one-time payment of $250. I'm all in favor of seniors getting their money in one fashion or another, and I'm not as concerned as some people as regards the deficit. But to be honest, if people are receiving Social Security, which they're entitled to certainly, and there's no increase in fact in the cost of living, other than to further stimulate the economy by putting more money into the hands of people who will spend it, why would the seniors specifically be getting, I'm not talking about entitlements, but why would we want to go ahead and give every senior who's receiving Social Security another $250? I'm not suggesting it wouldn't be nice. I'm just saying that I don't get the sense of it, in the sense that there's no need to do that for them to keep a pace with the cost of living. Your opinions obviously may differ, just like your mileage, and you're welcome again to call us 347-994-3796. We made reference to the falcon in the balloon. That was actually a play on the family's name. A member of the falcon family, I don't remember the boy's name and I didn't write it down, was believed to be in a weather balloon that his father had created. His father is a weather watcher, tornado watcher, etc., and had a small balloon with Mylar coating that was set to go at some point, and it was in some fashion released from the family's property, and because they couldn't find their youngest son, they thought he might have climbed into it. And if you were watching news any time today, from what I understand, every news channel, every radio station was covering this story, waiting for the balloon to come down, and when it did and they found out there was no child in it, they undertook a massive search to find the child, and it turned out he was hiding in the attic at his parents' home. Apparently he found out that people were looking for him, he was scared, and he was hiding in the attic. That's obviously a very good outcome, but a lot of people were on a very serious goose chase most of the day, and fortunately, as I say, it did have a good outcome. We mentioned the story out of Louisiana, and it really was this afternoon. A Louisiana justice of the peace refused to issue a marriage license to an interracial couple. He said it was out of concern for the children the couple might have. And this justice of the peace, Keith Bardwell was his name, said that in his experience, most interracial marriages don't last very long. So out of concern for the children, he in his infinite wisdom refused to hand out a marriage license. While obviously that refusal won't last, it is kind of telling about the fact that even though people were talking about how racism has ended and there is no more race as a factor in the United States, we still have a ways to go some places. And particularly in the parish, which is called, I'm never going to pronounce this right, which is an interesting name for a parish, but its real name is Tangipahoa. This is why I shouldn't have tried this. Tangipahoa Parish. In Louisiana, what the rest of us call counties are referred to as parishes, so that's the same as Tangipahoa County, or would be if there were another one in the country, which I doubt there is. Although we have looked it up, and as it turns out, Tangipahoa is actually an old Indian word, meaning our judges are racist. But there you have it. Capital punishment is a subject that tends to be one of those on which people will never persuade anyone else to change their view. You feel the way you feel the way I feel, assuming for the moment we don't agree, neither of us will ever persuade the other to change position. While that's certainly true of a lot of things, it is more true about capital punishment and perhaps abortion than any other subjects you can think of. But over the last several years, it's turned out as established that some innocent people have been executed, and it's more commonly established that, and Illinois comes to mind in terms of recent occurrences, that the trials or the jury selection or some other problem that was not just quote-unquote technical but which was substantive have caused people to be sentenced to death when perhaps they should not have been. In some cases, this has been remedied by DNA, but unfortunately, in a lot of cases, people have already been executed by the time the DNA proof comes through, demonstrating that they were not, in fact, guilty in spite of the conviction. Well, a talk show host, whose name escapes me, some of you may recall it was in the news today and yesterday, was able to obtain for his late great-uncles a pardon in the conviction that they received for murdering a Confederate general. Clearly, by the fact that I mentioned it was a Confederate general, this was around the time of what we in the North call the Civil War, and the people in the South refer to as the War Between the States. And George Carlin used to refer to this as saying, how can you have a civil war? If it's a war, it's not civil. But that said, he obtained this pardon, having proven that these two relatives of his were in fact not guilty of the murder, despite the fact they were obviously convicted. And he felt great about that, and it's great that he did that. But what about all those other people? Well, we need to examine what we're doing in terms of capital punishment in the United States. First, like our problems with healthcare, we're the only industrialized country that, and you may finish a sentence with regard to healthcare, but with regard to capital punishment, we're the only industrialized Western nation, meaning modern, that isn't so modern that we don't have capital punishment. South Africa has it, Russia has it, but in the Western industrialized world, we're alone. And the reasons that people recommend or urge or argue in favor of capital punishment are principally because it will be a deterrent, or because it costs less to kill someone than it does to house them for the rest of their lives, or because it'll prevent that person from committing the crime again, or for revenge. And before we go into further discussion, I'd like to mention two other things to you. One is our phone number, in case you'd like to jump in on this, or if you choose to jump in when our guest joins us, who will be talking about almost everything but this. Our number is 347-994-3796. Some weeks we get callers, some weeks we don't. But if you'd like to join in, as I say, feel free. Getting to the reasons for capital punishment and why those reasons don't hold are as follows. The deterrent effect. The idea is that if you kill someone for committing a crime, other people will be deterred from committing that crime. Unfortunately, or fortunately, there is zero proof for the position that capital punishment acts as a deterrent. Now, to be fair, we also have to acknowledge there's also no proof that it doesn't. There are states where they've had capital punishment and taken it and then removed it, and states where they haven't had capital punishment and then imposed it. And unfortunately, there is no proof that it either is a deterrent or isn't. It's impossible to prove. But as a result of that lack of proof, that is essentially not a reason to have capital punishment. To be fair, it's also not a reason not to. There are other reasons. We get to cost, and what you find is that the argument in favor of capital punishment makes, again, no sense. The research has been done. As a matter of fact, there was a study done in California, and there have actually been relatively few studies of this, oddly enough. But the study in California demonstrated that when you take into account all of the housing, all of the food, all of the guard costs, and everything else that's attributable to housing someone who, for example, at age 20, commits a murder and lives in jail for the rest of his or her life and dies at a normal age, say 85, that it costs less for all of that than to execute someone. Now, that requires some explanation. In order to execute somebody, you have to, of course, convict them of a capital crime, typically murder. And you then also have to do that which the Constitution and the courts provide, which is go through the entire appellate process. If you're going through that appellate process, that costs money. And additionally, there are a series of appeals that are post-conviction and post-decision. Some of that is gimmickry by attorneys who represent condemned killers, but even outside of whether it's trickery or not, or game playing, it doesn't matter. The fact is, they do it, they have the capacity to do it, and because they do it, there are costs associated on the part of the state that wants to do the execution. Cost, therefore, is obviously not a factor. When you talk about prevention, or another word for that is incapacitation, you are talking about the ability to make it impossible for that convicted murderer to commit the crime again. Well, if you execute somebody, clearly you are incapacitating him or her to commit another murder or to do anything else, including breathing, obviously. But you can affect that same thing by life without possibility of parole. A number of people who have had discussions on capital punishment, when they hear the phrase life without possibility of parole, get upset and say, there's no such thing. There's always going to be a possibility of someone getting parole. There is, however, no case in the United States where life without possibility of parole has been imposed that any person who was so sentenced has ever been paroled. There are a couple of cases where that sentence was imposed and the person was later found to be innocent. Different story, obviously. And if you object to someone innocent being released from prison, we don't have a whole lot of talking points. But if you're talking about life without possibility of parole for someone who is acknowledgedly guilty or convicted and never disproven to have committed the murder, there has never been a parole in a case like that. So in terms of incapacitation, life without parole does the same job as the death penalty. Finally, we come to revenge. And I have to tell you that although a good friend of mine who is, let's say, conservative, okay, he makes Attila the Hun look like a liberal, but a friend of mine who's conservative says that for certain crimes, he would prefer that someone that theoretically could be executed not be executed, but that they be made to live the rest of their life in prison and they be tortured or punished physically every day. Have done to them what they did to their victim if it's not a murder. But if it is a murder, then beat up or in some other fashion damaged or cut off a finger, something like that, every day. Of course, we all run out of fingers after a while. But the fact is that in terms of revenge, if the death penalty is the worst possible punishment and you're in favor of revenge, I have no argument. Not because I think you're wrong. That's a value judgment. You reasonable people, or let's not even go there, people can disagree. If I tell you what I think is moral or you tell me what you think is moral, neither one of us is right. We have our views, if they differ from one another. But if your view is that revenge is appropriate, either for society or for the family of a victim, is the right way to go, and you believe that death is the worst punishment, then I have to agree with you. There is no argument against that. Where there is an argument is this, and it is a moral argument, I acknowledge. The comment that's frequently made when you argue against the death penalty, people say, well, what about the biblical injunction of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth? The Bible definitely says that, but you have to understand what it means. And I'm not speaking of being religious. I'm talking about in terms of society historically. And what it means is this. Prior to the biblical period, if I killed a member of your family, you would kill my whole family for revenge. If that occurred, then my clan would kill every member of your clan. And then a member of your tribe, assuming this keeps getting larger, would kill my whole tribe or try to. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth was an admonition to reduce the punishment to fit the crime. So that if, in fact, I killed you, I would be killed, not my whole family. And that was an advance in human development. The question that comes to my mind is, have we not gotten any further since the biblical period? But again, that's something that you may disagree with. And again, if you that's the end of my soapbox on that subject. If you'd like to call in, let me give the number again. It is 347-994-3796. Before, I said I was going to say two things when I gave the phone number, and I only gave the phone number, so let me mention the other thing now. One of the things that I do is buy and rent out mobile homes. I'm not trying to offer you the mobile homes, but I am telling you that there's also a book that's been written on investing in mobile homes. It doesn't require a lot of money. Well, first off, the book requires very little money, but the process of investing in mobile homes requires very little money. And in some cases, none. I show you in the book how you can begin investing in mobile homes, create a cash flow, and provide wealth for your future, your retirement, etc., with little or no money. This is not one of those no money down types of books. That's not what we're talking about at all. But if you would like to see excerpts from the book and see what it's all about, you can do that. And the way you do that is on the web. And the website where you can get to that is a much longer web address, but you can get there more easily by going to tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire. Mobile millionaire is one word. Again, tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire. Hope you'll take a look, and please feel free to let me know on the radio program or by email, how you like the website and the book. Going back to our topics, I'd like to talk to you about books. We move from politics to books. I mentioned last week that one of the books I'm reading right now is called Don't Worry, Make Money by Richard Carlson. To remind you, Dr. Carlson, who is a professor. I'm not sure he's still in this area, but he was a teacher at Arizona State University. Previously wrote the book Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, the subtitle of which was It's All Small Stuff. Also, I'm now reading a book that was very popular about a year and a half ago and recommended by Oprah called The Power of Now by an author whose first name I can't pronounce and last name is Tolle, T-O-L-L-E. And for what it's worth, I'm also reading the autobiography of Gandhi. This is why I never get through books. I'm reading too many at one time. And so far, that's outstanding. We have someone on the air. It may be on the phone, rather. It may be our guest, and I will click on him and say, hello.
Hello.
Rob?
Yes.
Okay. This is Rob Trigg. He is the owner and operator of Creative Voice Productions and a longtime radio personality. Is that the right word?
It's been a while since I've been on the radio, but yes, okay. For many, many, many years I was an on-air disc jockey, as people commonly refer to him, and
yeah.
Had a lot of fun doing that. But since then, I have now just concentrated on radio commercials and advertising.
Great. I don't know if you, do you remember Gary Owens?
Oh, yes.
Gary Owens used to refer to, when he had a radio show in Los Angeles, used to refer to people who played records on the radio as a Josh Dickey, for what it's worth.
And for a few people in this business I've known, that's quite a true statement.
It's probably a compliment, as a matter of fact.
Probably.
Yeah. How long did you work in radio in terms of, I mean, you're still working in radio, but how long did you work in radio as an on-air personality?
Let me see. I started in 82 as an on-air personality and was full-time until about 1993. And after
mm-hmm.
that, I concentrated directly on just commercials. I mean, I still did
right.
an air shift, like a part-time fill-in thing, but mostly that time I became interested in doing the commercials.
Right. And do you miss at all being a DJ?
You do and you don't. I mean, I thought I'd miss it because, you know, I was a young kid. I started when I was 18 years old, and that became not only what I did for a living, but also became a part of me and became my lifestyle. And you actually started believing that you were this famous person that you were pretty much portraying on the radio. And I worked at a rock station, so if I actually ever did live the lifestyle I portrayed, I'd probably be dead today.
what's the old saying? What is it? Music, drug? No, what is it? Drugs and rock and roll.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, yeah. Yeah, it seems strange I should leave out sex. I'm sorry. It's terrible. When you were a DJ, you also did a lot of, I remember you talking about, Rob and I, by the way, are friends and have known each other for quite a while. I remember you talking about doing public appearances.
Yes. That was, you know, as a matter of fact, when I was a young jock starting out, I actually made more money being the guy going out and doing the public appearances than I made in a salary in radio. And I think a lot of personalities will supplement their income because, you know, to get a personality out to your club or a place of business, you know, it's like having a word of mouth. You know,
right.
This person endorses me in so many terms. And they were
mm-hmm.
willing to pay some big money for me as a young kid. I thought it was great.
Sure. Who wouldn't?
Back in the day, I found it very easy to, you know, meet people, talk with people, and just have a good time. And I would end up tripling the bar sales, not to encourage drinking to excess, but the owners of the bar certainly liked that and kept hiring me back week after week after week.
Stupid question. So when you would make a public appearance at a club, for example,
mm-hmm.
more people, I assume, would show up and go to the bar. That's one of the reasons the bar sales would go up.
I don't know if I was the particular draw. I remember this was back in the 80s when hair bands were big, you know. And so the local bars had these local hair bands that had quite the following anyway. I would be kind of like the icing on the cake. I would get out there, I mean, a la stage show like Kiss the Band or something. I would swig a beer, spit it up in the air, and just spray it all over, and then just run out to the crowd and just get crazy with them. And they just thought we were having a great time, and they didn't realize that I had that same beer through the entire night. Otherwise, I would have been in big trouble. But
on the floor, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So every once in a while, they would give me a new fresh one, so it looked like I was literally, I'd have maybe three drinks out of the whole thing, and they just thought I was the wildest and craziest partier that they had ever met.
I'll just share something with you, which is, you know, nowhere near your experience, but it reminded me of one of mine, which is, as a teenager, we used to go to this pizza parlor, and they would serve a carbonated apple, you know, an apple soft drink, right?
Okay.
and you would pour it, and I don't know how they did it, but it actually created a head, a foam, like a beer. And so, you know, I was this, like, 15-year-old kid, short, fat, wearing glasses, right, and walking around with a mug. They poured it in a mug. Walking around with a mug looking like I was holding a beer. I mean, no one really thought it was, but, you know, it looked very impressive.
It was your opportunity to impress people. Well, that's pretty much what my life was, only I was getting paid for it.
Your situation was undoubtedly better. So you transitioned. Now, you're still working in radio, besides your own company, which I want to get to in a second, you're still working in radio, and what are you doing?
Right now, I am the production and imaging director for CBS in Phoenix, which essentially for the radio station, what I do is create the commercials for the radio station, if that makes any sense. In other words, you have the commercials for the clients, which I do as a side business, but also with my job with the radio station, I create the commercials for the radio station, the fun, interesting stuff. You hear the big voice guy come on the radio and say the radio station name and, you know, talk about an event the radio station is doing. So it's essentially a commercial or a promotional announcement for the radio station, not necessarily for a paying client.
I got
now, I did that for many, many, many years, too, but now I'm exclusively working for on the radio side for the
station's promotions.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Those are what are called promos, right?
They're promos. That's what we call them.
Okay. Okay. And but you were also doing in-house production for a long time for the radio.
In 94, 93, right around there, I decided that, you know, if I guess it was an epiphany that I had as a young jock, and you know, I was living the lifestyle of a rock and roll person. I didn't want to be a 40-year-old disc jockey. I mean, and that's fine, and it's a great way to make a living. I just wanted to do something different, and I was always taught by a friend of mine to follow the money, and the money is in advertising, and I wanted to do that with my career, and that's when I went on into advertising.
Sure. So Casey Kasem wasn't your role model in that.
No.
I want to talk to you about advertising in radio in a little bit, because a number of the people who listen to the show, one out of three, are people in business, because one of the things that we mention in our on the site is that we're interested in business, and in addition to the investment area, but therefore an idea about what makes good and bad advertising will be discussing in a minute. But in terms of your experience, well, let me back up a step. A number of, because some people may not know this, most radio stations have some form of production facility, right?
Correct, yes.
In terms of advertising, so that they will produce their commercials for their advertising clients.
Absolutely.
And most of them do a completely rotten job.
I hope my boss isn't listening, but yeah, that's pretty true. I mean,
I'm not saying at your station, because I'm saying,
no, I mean,
but
what tends to happen in radio is you'll end up either having a client that doesn't understand it, and that says, I want my, you know, that's taking a class in marketing when he was in college and said, you know, I need my phone number in there four times, and if you don't mention the name of my business six times, it'll never get heard. And that's just not how radio works. Unfortunately, it'd be a lot easier for everybody if we could just get on the radio and mention our product, and hopefully people will buy, but that's not the way how people's brains work.
Mm-hmm. How do people's brains work in terms of advertising?
Well, you need...
Not too well. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
You need two things for successful radio advertising. And one is a right message. You have to say the right thing. And two is repetition. And a lot of people get confused about trying to buy as many people as they want. I mean, in sales, a lot of the time, you think it's a numbers game. You know, if I talk to 100 people, 10% will buy, blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
Work on the radio. I mean, because when you're on radio, it really is one-on-one. It isn't you talking to 10,000 or 300,000 people. It's one-on-one. Each person is alone with his radio. And So the good news and bad news situation. Bad news is it's not very easy to write a good creative spot. You need to do your homework. You need to take some time with it. And the most successful ads talk about your customers and their needs, and the unsuccessful commercials talk about you, the company. But the good news is, like you said, there's not that many good spots that are produced, so you'll definitely get noticed if you put a good ad on. And I feel that radio is the most powerful medium there is.
Because?
Well, it's something I learned from a guy named Roy H. Williams. They call him the Wizard of Ads, and he's kind of like a hero to me, and he taught me something about echoic retention. And that is,
I'm sorry, hearing. What was the word before retention?
Echoic. Echo.
Okay.
Echoic. It's
gotcha.
Hearing.
Right.
Here's what the problem you face as an advertiser. The amazing human brain. I mean, technically, you, me, and everyone else, we hear thousands of messages every day. It starts with
Absolutely.
The clock radio going off in the morning, your husband or your wife, the kids, television, billboards, radio, newspaper, magazines, the internet. I mean, the list goes on.
Your boss.
Yes.
Sure.
Everybody. If you remembered or actually digested even a small portion of what you've been hearing all day, you'd probably go insane.
Right.
And so do you think actually for 1 minute, if you put a commercial on the radio that said who, what, when, and where, that anyone would pay any attention to it? And unfortunately, most of the ads out there are talking about who I am, what I do, where I'm at, how late we're open, da-da-da-da, that have nothing that gets into my conscious or subconscious.
Right. By the way, are you familiar, and it may be on the in the course that the gentleman teaches that you were referring to, have you heard previously of proactive and reactive inhibition? Are you familiar with those terms?
No.
They're from psychology, and what they mean, as if I were an expert, what they mean is proactive. Is, let's say you've got a message, whatever it is you're doing. This certainly applies to advertising, but it applies to everything. If I want you to remember something, okay, that, for example, I sell widgets for $500, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everything you hear before is what's called proactive inhibition. The things that come before are going to inhibit your ability to remember that I sell widgets for $500, okay? Everything that comes after that is likewise, that's the reactive, and that's going to inhibit. So this goes along exactly with what you're saying.
Well, I think, you know, in our subconscious minds, mm-hmm. in order to protect our minds and to keep us from going insane, we have, like, I don't know, I guess like a little soldier, and he guards the door to our subconscious mind, and he won't let us waste time on something that's, you know, just not interesting or relevant to us. I mean,
I'm glad you explained how that little soldier might differentiate.
A little soldier in your brain.
You
got to be honest with yourself. If you heard an ad for a car dealership that was just screaming $5,000 off a car, and if you were not in the market for a car, would you even care or hear about it? You probably even ignore it.
Or hit the button on the radio.
Right. Most of us tune out and. Mm-hmm. Now, even if we were in a market for a car, we tune out. We've grown up in a society being advertising savvy, and they don't understand this. We are desensitized to the commercial. So, I mean, the car dealerships are still pouring millions of dollars into ads that only 2% of their audience will hear because they are kind of getting response. But don't confuse response with results, because if you're paying to reach the whole audience, you might as well pay to reach the whole audience. And
actually try to reach the whole audience.
Right. Well, a lot of people say, have you ever heard of, you know, I've tried radio, it doesn't work. Well, no,
right.
You probably tried a sale ad, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it definitely will not work for a long term.
When you say a sale ad, you're talking about, we're having a sale this week on widgets.
Yes. Our brains are smart enough to say, hey, once the sale's over, all that information that you've told me is irrelevant to me. The sale is over. I'm going to forget it. I'm not going to remember everything I heard. So let's give an example. Let's say you sell computers, and you put on an ad that says, we're having a sale. Now, anyone who is in the market for a computer and they're subconsciously are looking at that time for a computer, they might even notice your ad. No one else is going to.
Right.
Nobody will. I like to repeat that. No one else will remember your ad because if you're in the market for something, your mind will scan the horizon looking for what they call the reticular activator. It's something that will trip your memory of what your subconscious mind will constantly look for what you're in the market for. So
right.
If you buy a computer, let's say, once a year. Probably
mm-hmm.
not, but let's say you do.
All right. I was going to say I wish, but go ahead.
All right, so if there are 52 weeks in a year, if you do the math, approximately 2% of the people
right.
are in the market at any given time for a computer. So
at any given week, yeah.
Yes, so if the people who are in the market for your weekly ad are the only ones who will hear it, that means right off the bat, 98% of your dollars that you're paying for advertising and to reach people are being flushed down the toilet because
right.
they will not remember a sale for an ad. So the argument always has become, you know, hey, well, if you advertise year round or every week, you're going to get everybody. And the answer to that is no. Why? Because you
people
happen
tune
to,
out.
Well, yeah, you happen to have to be the biggest and loudest ad of the day, and you have to beat all the others. And you can't control how many ads you put. I mean, you know, that how many ads other people buy or how big a schedule they have. They have multi-million-dollar advertising budgets. They could go on every radio station. So you don't want to compete with that. And the most important thing is the customer already doesn't have a preference, because if they have a preference, it doesn't matter how good your ad is at that particular time for your sale. They're gonna. I always buy from blank because I have a preference.
Yeah.
And, go ahead.
No, let me just say two things. One, before you go on, let me give the phone number in case anyone does wish to call in. Some weeks we get calls and some weeks we don't. That number, if you want to join in, ask Rob a question or add to the discussion, is 347-994-3796. And we're on with Rob Trigg of Creative Voice Productions. Go ahead, Rob, with what you were saying. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just, I guess, can you imagine if car dealers would take all that money that they start yelling out price point and actually put it into an ad that listeners remember? I think, you know, the number one goal of an advertiser is to be top of mind, to be the preferred vendor. In other words, when I'm in the market for your product, your car, or
I
a
think
car,
of you.
I think of you. Correct.
And that gets to the point you were making before I was going to ask. When you said only 2% of these people that are listening to the radio station when your ad is on will effectively hear you because they're the only ones that are in the market for your product that week,
mm-hmm.
the reason you want to be remembered if you're the advertiser is because in some other week, whether they hear your ad or not, you want someone who is thinking, you know what, now I really need to buy a car or a computer. Who is that guy I want? Oh, yeah.
Right.
ABC Computers or whatever it is.
It becomes a matter of who they trust.
Right.
In this day and age, I would say people are willing to spend their money. I mean, it's not as prevalent as, you know, past, but I'm
right.
willing to spend my money if I think I'm going to get something of value, something it's going to have to last me now. When I buy a
right.
new car, I'm not going to trade it in every year. I mean,
right.
the economy doesn't allow that. So if I'm going to buy,
right.
I want a good deal.
And you want it to be something that's going to be a good deal because it lasts in part, yeah.
Right, and so you want to buy from somebody you trust. And
right.
so screaming out price point isn't going to be the way to get people to trust you, and it certainly isn't going to be get people to remember you because, again, the amazing human brain says, hey, irrelevant information, that sale's over. I'm forgetting all about it.
I'm done,
and I
yeah.
just spent all that money without trying to build any kind of top-of-mind awareness for your product.
Okay, and then we transition obviously into the next area because we've just talked about what makes an ad bad or useless, or nearly useless. What actually makes it good?
All right, let's take it this way.
Mm-hmm.
If I said to you, the sand between your toes feels cool as the refreshing wind splashes sea mist across your brow. You look across the breaking waves and focus on a big red globe sinking into the horizon. The orange glow slowly turns dark purple, and then darkness cascades across the sky, giving way to the stars and the moon, your only light to guide you the rest of the way along the beach. Did you go to the beach just now?
In my mind, sure.
Yeah, sure. Now, if I had said to you, imagine yourself on a beach, immediately the soldier is going to go, wait a minute, ad, I'm not going to go imagining myself on a beach. So I think the key to a great ad is to to do it in a way that doesn't let them know that it's an ad, to get by the little soldier guard in the door, and you find yourself already into the story and into the you know, the product, and then offer a solution to their problem.
Right.
You know, a good commercial talks about, like I said before, a good commercial talks about the person, what's in it for them, how it relates to what is in it for them, as opposed to how good or big or bad or great my company is.
Right. You mentioned the way you just did that clearly was a great example, although I don't think it touched upon something else I know you do, which I'll come back to. But the thing you illustrated was something that they teach to people who are interested in either improvisation or writing plays. Mm-hmm. And what they tell you is, come in late and leave early. Okay? In other words, you don't tell a story by saying, many years ago in the town of Nod, or whatever. You just show them, you know, right there in the town of Nod in the middle of a conversation.
Right.
That's why you'll see a lot of plays that begin like that, because that sucks you in as an audience member. And what you did essentially did the same thing. I was on that beach, as I'm sure everyone else was who was listening, because you placed them there. And that's, in addition to whatever other skills you have, that's the skill of a dramatist.
And I believe that sound, I create pictures with sound. That's what I've always wanted to do, and I think that's just the best way to get past the little soldier. Because really, the customer wants to know one thing, why. What's
and
it
what
for
you
me?
Said before, what's in it for me, right.
Yeah, stop selling the features and sell the benefit. People try and sell the features all the time. You know, I really don't want fuel injection. I do, but I don't. What I want is gas savings. So why do you say this has this when you can say, hey, it's got gas savings. I don't want the fuel injection. I want gas savings. I don't want prettiest flowers. I want the look on my wife's face when I give them to her. That's
absolutely
what I'm buying. And
yeah, and I'll tell you something else. You mentioned fuel injection, and one of the things I've noticed in a lot of commercials that are either selling cars or selling auto repairs and that kind of thing, now, this is not a gender-based thing, because I'm a guy who doesn't know a lot about mechanical stuff, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's true of a lot of women, too, and there are also clearly women who, you know vastly more. In fact, I know somebody very well who knows vastly more about mechanical stuff than I do, who's a woman. But what I was going to say is, they talk about things like fuel injection. Do I know what fuel injection is?
And that brings me to the point that you got to stop selling the features.
Mm-hmm.
You got to sell the benefit to the customer. I mean, are you really looking to buy a motorcycle, or are you looking to have some fun?
Right.
I mean, there are people out there that want the motorcycle for the gas savings. They want the motorcycle to get economically to and from work. But for the most part, I think that people that are on the motorcycle are a little bit more daring than the rest of us. Want a little bit more fun. If you're going to buy a dirt bike, are you going to buy the so many cc dirt bike? Or are you going to get the one that's going to get you in the air the highest, or whatever it is that you're selling?
You're looking for right.
Yeah, don't sell the features. Sell the benefits.
Yeah, and don't sell me how good you are. Sell me what it is I'm going to get out of it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. One of the thing I was referring to earlier is first off, you're a funny guy. And I've noticed in a lot of the spots that you do, that I've heard, I don't pretend to have heard all of the stuff you've done, but you use humor a lot in your commercial spots.
I think that's another way to get past the soldier. I mean, your guard's down when you're laughing or having a good time or enjoying something. I mean, if I just started spewing out boring facts, it's just not going to... to the soldier is going to say, no, I'm tired of hearing the ads. Geico. Let's look at Geico insurance.
Sure.
It's been around for 70-plus years, but what we've really noticed with Geico, and it's become one of the top insurance companies, is the ads that they have done. You know, the cavemen, the gecko, all the funny, wonderful ads. But if you'll notice, with every single one of their ads, at the end, they'll say, we'll save you, if you give us 15, you know, we'll save you 15 minutes, could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Every single ad that they do continues to build bricks of the house in your mind of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the caveman or the lizard or whatever they're doing. I mean, there's a million Geico ads, but every one of them has the same message. Again, that brings us around to the first thing you really know, you need to have repetition and a right message. And they've been very successful putting the repetition over on saving money. And now it didn't work right away. You know, people didn't go, oh, you know, I'm going to save money. I'm going to go to Geico. It's just worked over years and years of saying the exact same thing. No matter what their commercials are, they always say 15 minutes.
Give us 15 minutes and we'll save you 15%. Right.
And that is a good
answer. I stated it wrong. It's actually 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Yes.
Or more. Right.
On your car insurance. Correct. And they've done it over, and they've done such a wonderful job of it. Guy, you know, these people that I'd never switch my insurance company. I always liked my insurance guy, blah, 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 blah. But after a while, you keep opening up your bill and, you know, hey, you know what? It's getting too expensive. Maybe I will. And who are they going to think of? Hey, the one message says we'll save, you know, for 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Now, that's saying I'm not going to sit all day through a sales pitch. I'm going to go in there. You're either going to give me a good deal or you're not. I mean, time is worth more than money to people. You got to keep that in mind too. I mean, if you don't believe me, take a look outside. There's you know, convenience stores on the same on the same parking lot as there is a grocery store, and the grocery store will have much lower prices. But you'd rather pay the higher cost to get in there and get out quick because of time.
Right, absolutely. As a matter of fact, someone we both know has a father who owns convenience stores, and he says he started making a lot more money when he put in shopping carts. Truly, people started buying more stuff because it is convenient, and now that adds an additional layer of convenience. So what you're saying is certainly right. Time becomes more important than money.
Absolutely, and you don't want to get stuck behind the lady who has 5 minutes worth of groceries, just to pick up your soda pop. And I always found that interesting. You know, people say, would you rather have more time or money? And they did a survey where the very rich would rather, of course, have more time.
More time.
And then the people that are in the middle incomes would rather have more time. And then I think even more than not, of people without money would rather have more time than money. So
The last one I'm not sure you're right on.
I remember it being almost 50% or more.
Really? Okay.
Would rather have more time.
Even poor people, you're saying?
Yes.
More than 50%? Okay, well, then maybe you are. I was going to say, because having been, you know, real middle class and having at one point been real poor, at that time didn't matter nearly as much as money.
It is until you're out there and you're busting your butt, you know, 20 hours a day to get money.
Yeah.
You know,
that's probably true. I wish I had more time.
Because that's the one finite thing we all have, you know.
That's
true. We all have just a little bit of more time. And if you, I remember hearing a seminar when the guy says, who here is broke? And it was a financial seminar, and everyone raised their hand.
Mm-hmm.
Some were less broke or more broke, but they all had the same amount of time to make or break your money. So I think time is really what you want to sell when you're selling something to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And time.
Right. And speaking of time, before we run out of it,
let me
ask you to talk about Commercial Voice Productions and how, as well, how somebody can get in touch with you through your website. Go ahead, please.
Tell
me what Commercial Voice Production does, first of all.
Creative Voice Productions.
I'm sorry, Creative Voice Productions. I apologize.
I'm a voice actor, which means I provide the voice for television, radio, film, cartoons, and business presentations for smaller business. But I also I got the knack for writing commercials through the years of working in radio and seeing how crappy the commercials were that were getting sent to me. I decided, I wanted to figure out what would really work for commercials, and so I ended up getting a knack for writing commercials. And if you go to creativevoiceproductions.com, you'll hear examples of my work. You just go to the commercial section there, and those commercials I wrote for clients that wanted something different, something that will get the message across. And each one tries to come across with one point, because you really only got one shot to get one point by the little soldier. that's guarding the subconscious to your brain. So if you can do that and get your message across, I think you'll have some successful advertising. So that's one aspect of Creative Voice Productions. The other is, of course, the voiceover work. So I'm willing to read a script that you have, or if you wish to have somebody that, you know, wants to figure out how you're advertising, you can make it better, I'd be glad to help them write a script for you. So,
and the way to do that, again, is creativevoiceproductions.com, and you'll get a go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah, you're on,
did I get
you're on
that
the right,
right
track. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, I was going to say, because please tell me I didn't blow it again. And that's where you can, as Rob was saying, hear samples of his work, which is excellent, and also get an idea about the services that they offer. This is not an advertisement for them, but you know, the fact is that he's very good at what he does. I've got to tell you, since we don't have a whole lot of time, and I've shared this with you before, Rob, I listen to radio on the Internet, as all of you are doing right now, but I listen to live radio on the Internet all day, some days, you know, while I'm working, and of course then turn off the sound when I'm actually on the phone. But I hear a lot of commercials, and it makes me realize how valuable what you do is, because there are so many really, really lousy commercials. There is one in a city in the Midwest where this fellow says, and again, I shared this with you because it was so terrible, says, you know, if I were a plumber, I would have my family in the business, and I would take the materials that I don't use and recycle them and give the money to charity. And I would, you know, I would also give a discount to senior citizens because they paved the way to make life easier for fellows like me. The good news is I don't have to be a plumber because, and then he mentions the name of the company, already is a plumber, and they do all those things. And then,
well,
you know, somebody
again,
else comes
again,
out and gives
you know,
the voice.
People don't want to hear what's in it for you. They don't want to hear about you. They
yeah.
want to hear what's in it for them. And,
right.
And that's just human nature.
And there's never a mention, except for the fact that they charge reasonable prices. Okay, great. But, I mean, there's not only no humor in that. Of course, it does create a laugh if you listen to it enough.
Well, what is reasonable prices mean? It pretty much means about the same as everyone else. So that really isn't
right.
a benefit for the consumer.
That's exactly
prices,
right.
So.
Yeah. So it's just, I mean, that's one example. But, you know, as we were talking about before, a lot of stations have their own production, and they produce commercials, and you get the feeling, by the way, we're down to about 2 minutes, that they're doing it, you know, they're doing it cheaply. As cheaply as possible for the client.
Well, unfortunately, what happens a lot of times is the salesperson finds out what the client does, writes down information, sends it off to the production guy who really doesn't care or have anything invested into it, and he reads whatever they write, and he can read it without flubbing it up or stumbling over his own words, and, hey, it sounds good to me, sounds good to you, it sounds great, and everyone's happy. Everyone's
yeah.
happy except for the client who really doesn't get any work, and they unfortunately say, you know, radio doesn't work for me.
That's right,
and
kills
ridiculous.
It for other people. Yeah.
So.
Okay, well, the show is, speaking of everything, we are almost out of time. I want to thank Rob Trigg of Creative Voice Productions, and the website, again, is creativevoiceproductions.com. I suggest if you're interested in advertising at all, even if just as an observer and listener, it would be a good trip to take on the Internet. And we'll be back next week at 8 o'clock Pacific and 11 o'clock Eastern. And I want to thank Rob, and I'll talk for a second or two after you disconnect. But, Rob, thanks very much. Anything else you'd like to add in the last minute?
Jeff, I find you very interesting. You have yourself a great rest of the show, and thanks for having me on.
Well, you're obviously wrong about the first thing. Thanks very much, Rob. Take care.
See you. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. And again, that was Rob Trigg. Obviously, it's too late for you to call tonight because we only have about a minute left, but I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. We will be back next week at, again, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern time. In a few weeks, we'll be switching time, but I'll tell you more about that next week. In the meantime, let me urge you to go, again, as I did earlier, to Blog Wizardry's site, jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. And we hope you'll join us next week. That's right. And whenever I do that, we always end up with more time. I used to do this professionally. You would think I would know better. Quick bit of weird news for you as we go off. in Longview, Washington recently, police arrested a man who was trying to raise some money, showing industrial spirit. He offered to allow people to kick him in the groin if they would pay him $5. And before it got going badly, they arrested him. Anyway, join us next week, blogtalkradio.com/Jeff-Bushman. Thanks very much. See you then.